Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really breaking down a market that honestly hasn't seen much change for ages. Wills and enduring powers of attorney, EPAs, for, well, forever. It felt like this was just lawyer territory. If you needed a will, you went to a law firm. Simple.
No.
But our sources, they're showing this huge shift happening, like right now. Technology, new competitors, it's all changing.
It really is a pivotal moment. Law firms are suddenly finding their, traditional space being squeezed from both sides. You've got the established players like Public Trust who are seriously upping their game with slick online tools.
Right.
And then you've got these newer, aggressive entrants gathered. Here's a name that comes up, offering free will sometimes. It shows that people now just expect this stuff to be easily available online.
Yeah, it's kind of shocking when you think about how little pressure there was before. Law
Yeah.
firms just didn't need to innovate in this area. I
No.
mean, the only real competition was from trustee companies,
Sure.
right?
Exactly. And let's be honest, those trustee companies often had a reputation for, well, maybe not the best service, high fees, operational headaches. They weren't exactly setting a high bar. And that lack of pressure, it sort of let traditional firms get a bit complacent, maybe fall into some inefficient habits. But now, those same trustee companies are pushing hard into digital.
And you add the sheer speed and volume of the new tech players.
And suddenly, sitting back just isn't an option anymore. You can't rely on how things used to be.
So, okay, imagine you're running a law firm. You see this steady, reliable work, this bread and butter stuff starting to dry up because of these digital competitors. What do you actually do?
That's the core question.
And that's our mission for this deep dive. We've looked at the analysis, and it seems to lay out six pretty distinct strategic paths firms can take. We'll go right from, well, the worst option, doing nothing, all the way to fully embracing digital collaboration.
Sounds good.
Okay, let's start at the edges then. The two most, I guess, absolute choices a firm could make right now.
Right. The first one, and honestly, probably the riskiest in the long run, is option one. Just carry on as you are. Business as usual. Pretend the disruption isn't really happening.
And the research really paints a picture of what that looks like in practice, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's firms still making clients use those awful clunky PDF forms for EPAs.
Yeah, the ones where staff end up typing the same information over and over again, and the final documents, often poorly formatted, hard for the client to read, and just takes ages to actually produce.
And for wills, it's like basic templates, copy-pasting clauses.
Right. Relying on copy-paste for anything slightly non-standard. And the client experience itself is, well, painful. Making them come into the office, maybe multiple times, just to give instructions, often by hand.
It takes weeks or even months to get the documents.
Weeks, sometimes months, yeah. It's not exactly impressing the client, especially when they see the bill.
So hang on. Using a bad PDF doesn't just lose you the, say, $500 fee for the will itself. It could cost the whole relationship. That seems huge.
It is huge. The sources are pretty clear. The inevitable result is a slow bleed. Clients take that will or EPA work elsewhere. And here's a kicker, they often take all the related legal work too.
Like the house sale later on, or the estate administration.
Exactly. The really valuable stuff that stems from that initial relationship, that poor first impression with the will potentially costs the firm everything down the line. It's a strategic failure, really.
Wow. Okay, so if doing nothing is the slow decline, what's the other extreme? The quick exit. Option two.
Option two is precisely that. Cut your losses and get out of this area of practice altogether. Specialize elsewhere.
The thinking being that the competition's just too intense now. And maybe the investment needed in tech is just too much for some firms.
That's the rationale. If wills and EPAs aren't your core strength, maybe you focus on, say, commercial law or family law, whatever you genuinely excel at.
And just refer the will clients out.
Refer them out to specialist firms or providers who are set up for it. Focus your energy where you have a real competitive advantage. If others are automating like crazy, maybe it's smarter to let them handle that high-volume, standardized work.
But the sources make a really interesting point here about geography, right? Because of remote work demonstrated during the pandemic.
Yeah, the game changed. COVID showed everyone that you don't need to be local for this kind of work. Specialist firms, maybe based anywhere, can now offer these services efficiently across the whole country.
So if you exit and refer out, you're not just sending them down the road, you might be sending them to a super efficient national competitor.
A competitor who might be very good at keeping that client for everything else, too. You might never see them again. So the decision to exit isn't just about your local market anymore. It's about acknowledging this national tech-driven competition that operates at a completely different speed unless you're prepared to really overhaul things yourself.
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting, I think, because it's not just stay the same or get out. There are these middle paths, these four options that actually use technology to maybe redesign the service.
Exactly. Four ways to potentially adapt and thrive.
Well, let's start with the kind of lowest barrier to entry, option three.
Option three is automating your internal processes, the hidden helper approach. So the client experience, it stays pretty traditional.
They still call up, make an appointment, come in, sit down with the lawyer.
Precisely. They might never even know there's technology involved behind the scenes.
But back at the lawyer's desk, things are different.
Massively different. The analysis suggests the lawyer or their team can then use automation tools to, and I quote, quickly knock out the full set of documents 100% consistently in just a few minutes.
Wow. Minutes. And I bet it's even faster for mirror wills for couples.
Oh, absolutely. Because you just reuse the data instantly. Huge time saving, much more accurate.
But wait a second. If it only takes minutes because of the automation, but the client doesn't know, isn't that a bit, I don't know, misleading? Shouldn't they charge less or be upfront about the efficiency?
That's a really interesting strategic question firms have to grapple with. For many using this option, it's initially about survival, you know, cutting internal costs, ensuring that consistency first.
Okay.
And you can usually customize the output, get the documents looking exactly like the firm's traditional style, fonts and all, for a small extra cost. So it maintains that high quality feel. It's very much a dipping a toe in the water strategy, low risk.
Okay, so that's hiding the tech. What about bringing it out more? Option four sounds like it puts the onus on the client.
Yeah. Option four is a bigger step. It's where the firm decides, okay, let's get maximum efficiency for us by having the client input all their information directly.
So the client fills out an online form or interview, and that data basically generates the documents.
That's the idea. It definitely saves the law firm time and effort. And the research does suggest clients can generally manage this kind of input.
But doesn't that feel a bit like the client is doing the firm's work? Like being an unpaid data entry clerk?
That's the potential downside, exactly.
You save time, sure.
Yeah.
But is the client feeling valued? Are they getting the expertise they thought they were paying for?
And the sources question this approach for that very reason. It can erode the perceived value. Part of why you hire a lawyer is because they're supposed to do it better, faster, and handle the complexity for you.
Right.
If you make the client struggle through complex online questions, they might start wondering what exactly they're paying those legal fees for. It can create frustration.
That tension efficiency versus client value seems to lead straight into option five, which sounds like it tries to balance that.
Option five tries to get the best of both worlds. It's about getting the client's instructions digitally, but focusing on context, not just pure data entry.
How does that work in practice? Is it still an online form?
Yeah, typically a dedicated online form, maybe embedded on the firm's website, branded to look like them. But the key difference is the type of questions.
Okay, so option four is like, enter executor name here. Option five is?
Option five asks more open-ended questions. Things like, could you tell us why you're thinking about making a new will now? Or, what are your main goals for your estate plan?
Ah, so instead of just, do you want to leave out child X? Yes, no. You get the story behind it.
Exactly. Closed questions, the kind tied directly to document logic, they miss all the nuance. Open questions encourage the client to explain their situation in their own words.
And that helps the lawyer spot potential issues, like maybe a complicated family situation or why someone's being disinherited.
Precisely. Things that simple data entry would completely miss. The lawyer gets the context needed to apply their professional judgment and draft the right documents for that specific, maybe complex situation. It's not just about generating a document, but the best document.
Okay, I can see the value there. It's using tech to gather better information for the lawyer to work with.
Absolutely. And there's a bonus value too. If you combine that smart context gathering form with some decent online marketing,
it becomes a lead generator.
A powerful one. People searching online find the form, fill it out because it feels helpful, and boom, the firm has a well-qualified lead with rich context ready for a follow-up call.
Right. That makes sense. Which brings us to the final option, option six. The analysis seemed to suggest this might be the kind of gold standard, the collaborative approach.
Yeah, option six is framed as potentially the most innovative path. It moves beyond that either split, either the tech is hidden or the client does all the work. Instead, the lawyer and client use the technology together.
By co-designing the service.
That's a great way to put it. It's a collaborative process.
And the logic is pretty compelling, isn't it? An experienced lawyer who uses these automation tools regularly is always going to be faster and better at it than a client doing it once, cold.
Absolutely. Much faster, much more efficient. And if the client understands they're getting a better, faster result, maybe even for a fixed fee, then seeing the streamlined process in action can actually build confidence and demonstrate professionalism.
So how does it work? The lawyer walks them through it.
Yeah. The lawyer uses a structured, automated questionnaire or interview tool with the client. They can do this in the office, sure, but the real leap is doing it via video call, maybe sharing their screen.
Oh, okay. So you capture all the necessary information systematically, make sure nothing's missed.
And you build rapport at the same time. It's still a human interaction guided by technology, and you can often generate draft documents right there at the end of the meeting for the client to see.
And thinking back to the pandemic, we all got used to video calls. Clients often prefer it, right? Mm. No travel, no parking, no taking half a day off work.
It makes legal services much more accessible. And this opens up real service innovation. The sources mention things like offering evening appointments.
Oh, yeah, for people who can't easily take time off during the day or have kids to sort out.
Exactly. And suddenly, a firm using this Option 6 approach, no matter where their physical office is, can offer this high-quality, efficient, collaborative service to clients anywhere in the country. Geography just melts away as a barrier.
So, stepping back, what does this all add up to? We've gone from, you know, firms stuck with old PDFs taking weeks, right through to lawyers and clients co-designing documents together on a screen share, maybe in the evening. That's a huge range.
It's a massive spectrum of possibilities. The technology to do most of this, it's largely available now.
Yeah, you mentioned often low-cost subscriptions, even free trials.
Right. So the core challenge here, the really difficult part for many law firms, it isn't actually about finding or affording the technology.
It's about
grappling with their fundamental business model, their strategy. Are they willing to shift how they think about value, maybe move away from billing purely for time spent cutting and pasting towards billing for the value of, say, structured expert advice, efficient processes, and guaranteed outcomes.
That shift in thinking.
Yeah.
That's the hard part. Much harder than just signing up for a piece of software.
It really is. And the big takeaway from the analysis, I think, is that for this kind of high volume, more standardized professional work, location just isn't the protection it used to be.
So the final thought for you, the listener.
Yeah. Think about your own field, whatever industry you're in. What tasks, what services used to be safe because they were local or because the process was just done a certain way?
And are those things now vulnerable? Vulnerable to national competitors, maybe remote players, using guided, automated, super efficient systems.
What essential part of your service, the value you provide, needs that redesign? Needs to be rethought around collaboration, efficiency, and maybe a whole new definition of value, rather than just relying on location or time spent? That's the strategic question that technology has forced in almost every professional field today.